This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Recent research shows that artificial intelligence can be used in many fields to boost the work skills of the lowest performers up to what was previously considered average to way above average performance. What's this mean for the future of business?
I don't think that extensive reductions may take place because we're still going to rely on, I think, humans to fine-tune the results we get, even if they're coming from AI.
Then, in transitioning from fossil fuels to green energy, many workers could face career disruption.
There are many high-skilled jobs required to develop the new green technology, but we also need a lot more blue-collar work as well to build this new green infrastructure.
Those two stories and more are straight ahead on this week's show. Stay tuned. InfoTrack begins right after this.
Wendy's Peppermint Frosty and Frosty Cream Cold Brew make the perfect gift for anyone in your life, especially for you. Yeah, this year you're sitting on your own lap and getting yourself what you want, finally. And now every day this season, unlock 20% off your total when you get any small, medium, or large Frosty in the Wendy's app. So order something from your own wish list this year.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's with app offer and registration. Applies to menu items only. Taxes and fees excluded.
Dell's Cyber Monday event is their biggest sale of the year. Shop limited time deals on laptops like the stylish, innovative XPS 13. Engineered to do it all on the Intel Evo platform. Plus, save big on ultra-sharp monitors and top-brand accessories. It's the perfect time to upgrade any home, business, or gaming setup powered by Intel Core processors. Shop now at Dell.com/deals to take advantage of huge savings and free shipping. Again, that's Dell.com/deals.
What's for dinner? Burgers?
After last week, no thanks.
Avoiding foods due to fear of diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools? It may not be just stomach issues. It could be EPI, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. EPI can cause uncomfortable symptoms because it's a condition where the pancreas doesn't release enough digestive enzymes to break down food. But EPI can be managed. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor about your symptoms. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Happy 62nd birthday, Granddad.
Thanks, sweetheart.
I got you this.
A mug. What does it say? Beware. If you are 60 or older, you may be at increased risk of serious consequences from RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, compared to adults younger than 60.
Not all dangers come with warning labels. Talk to your pharmacist or doctor about getting vaccinated against RSV today. RSV vaccines, including Pfizer's, are available. Learn more at BewareOfRSV.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Research suggests that artificial intelligence, or AI, elevates the skills of the low performers in various fields to average or above average performance. Joining us to talk about this is Edward McFaulin III, assistant professor in the Technology and Operations Management Unit at Harvard Business School. Professor, what are the challenges posed by the fact that modern professional work consists of a broad range of activities rather than one specialization in terms of using artificial intelligence?
A lot of what artificial intelligence was originally built for was specific tasks. So if you think about the original models that organizations were using, they were trained to predict, you know, who will click on something, what product someone wants. And now we have these models that are more general in their knowledge so that they are trying to learn a whole host of different skills. They can answer questions, they can give you insights, you can talk back to it. And so what that means, instead of being optimized and then deployed for a specific use case, now we have algorithms that are massive that are trained just on consuming information. And what that means, I think, is that like with humans, there's a set of things any given model is good at and a set of things that it's not good at. We kind of talk about this in terms of the sort of AI frontier. So we're kind of uncertain about how useful it will be at any given task because we don't know how good the AI is at it.
A CEO predicted there would be a significant reduction in the need for engineers due to AI. Why or why not would you agree with that?
AI's ability to, let's say, again, write software it can do it very quickly. So I could assume that if your business proposition that the developers are seeking to solve is to generate lots and lots and lots of code very quickly, I can see AI being much better at that. But I think just because a tool has been built on, let's say, all of the code written, it is trying to fit to the average answer. So if I ask it to write a code for a certain challenge, try to figure out what is the best guess at what I could be asking for. But you can imagine that a human in that same setting would understand a lot more context and write superior code for that specific problem. It's almost like, can I write a pretty good answer to any question or to solve any problem? Or can I give you the best answer for the precise problem you're after? And so I think there's still going to be this marrying of engineers with these tools to scale them up potentially, maybe making the first pass a little bit easier or writing the code much more quickly. But I don't think that this idea of extensive reductions may take place because we're still going to rely on, I think, at least in the current iteration, humans to really sort of fine tune the results we get, even if they're coming from AI.
We're talking with Edward McFallon III, assistant professor in the Technology and Operations Management Unit at Harvard Business School, talking about artificial intelligence. Professor, if some individuals got really good at working with AI, how could this maybe shift the dynamics of the job market and the recruitment of top talent?
Oh, I think it'd have a massive impact. I think it's very possible that if workers who get very competent at using the tool, what's very clear from all the research that has been done, including research that myself and my team did, it creates a lot of productivity benefits. So that means that people are able to solve problems much more quickly, that I think it can make people far more productive and therefore more attractive in terms of recruitment. What we've seen is that a lot of folks, even those relatively speaking who are less skilled, if they can use these tools, they can increase their productivity, increase their performance significantly more than even those that may be the higher end potentially. So I think those who have these tools and are using it will be the prominent workers who companies are out and attracted to.
Will the benefits of AI also extend to professions like customer service? And if so, how would that work?
I believe it can. I believe folks are even trying to do that even as we speak. There's a tension here, right? Customer service is very costly. A customer calls in with a complaint and a problem, and the goal of the customer service agent is to try to help resolve that problem. And a lot of times the questions people call in with, though we think our questions are unique or require human responses, they don't really always. Organizations know this, which is why they try to have automated services for that, but there's lots of tensions around that. And so with these new tools for AI, they can appear to be more human-like, maybe to the point of person not knowing, which could certainly create value and scale for organizations trying to answer simple questions for people calling to these call centers. I would say the other thing, though, is that if I have a human who is given such a tool that is well adapted to the problem, you can imagine me being able to answer far more questions, far more holistically and far more quickly than I could before. Because even when a question does require human intervention, it may require a customer service rep knowing a minute detail about a policy. I may need to sort of cross-reference purchases and customer information. And all that could happen much more smoothly with a system like an AI system that's enabling that. And so customer service rep could end up being far more effective in answering far more questions and pleasing customers far more with a tool like this.
We've been talking about business and the job market in that area as far as artificial intelligence. How about educational institutions? How would they need to adapt to this evolving landscape?
There's a couple of pieces here. I think the primary one is how do we educate the students from primary, middle school, high school, college, graduate school, professional schools to be not only aware of, but effectively using these tools, because I think it can very much help them solve the problems they're after, get the skills they need, and also sort of move into the marketplace and be highly sought after in terms of recruitment. I think another question is, how do we train them to use it appropriately? How do we train them to be thoughtful about questioning it, pushing back on it, not becoming simply sort of adopters that fall asleep at the wheel and just sort of use whatever it tells them, but actually to use it to enhance their existing knowledge, because these tools do hallucinate. They do sometimes say things that are factually incorrect. And what you don't want are folks who have gotten accustomed to using these tools but are not equally accustomed to being able to interact with them in a way that deciphers what is fact and not, and what can be taken out of what's been said and applied to the questions and problems they're trying to solve.
What's the time horizon for all of these changes to happen? Do you see this happening soon, you know, within the next few years, or are we looking decades down the road?
All of the above. I think there are some challenges that are going to require time. I think there are some challenges and some use cases that we see being applied now. So these tools will continue to evolve. I think about many of the other technologies that we observed and what the progression of them from the internet being created to browsers and what they did and what they created, which, you know, is a straight line toward things like Amazon and Meta and Google and what have you, right? My sense is that there will be some use cases of these tools that, in fact, will be very obvious, very wide adopted, and happen in the next few years. And there will be some that we can't maybe even conceptualize of now, new organizations that come up, new use cases that really kind of change in a fundamental way how we interact, how business is done, how people learn, grow, compete, all these things. And I think we just can't conceptualize some of them yet because we haven't seen them yet.
Edward McFarland III, Assistant Professor in the Technology and Operations Management Unit at Harvard Business School. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Next, green energy impacting fossil fuel workers. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
Wendy's Peppermint Frosty and Frosty Cream Cold Brew make the perfect gift for anyone in your life, especially for you. Yeah, this year you're sitting on your own lap and getting yourself what you want, finally. And now every day this season, unlock 20% off your total when you get any small, medium, or large Frosty in the Wendy's app. So order something from your own wish list this year.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's with app offer and registration. Applies to menu items only. Taxes and fees excluded.
Dell's Cyber Monday event is their biggest sale of the year. Shop limited time deals on laptops like the stylish, innovative XPS 13. Engineered to do it all on the Intel Evo platform. Plus, save big on ultra-sharp monitors and top-brand accessories. It's the perfect time to upgrade any home, business, or gaming setup powered by Intel Core processors. Shop now at Dell.com/deals to take advantage of huge savings and free shipping. Again, that's Dell.com/deals.
Oh, I love this restaurant. Glad we got a table quickly.
What does that sign say?
Caution, wet floor?
No, right next to it.
If you are 60 or older, you may be at increased risk of serious consequences from RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, compared to adults younger than 60. Huh, I didn't know that.
Not all dangers come with warning labels. Talk to your pharmacist or doctor about getting vaccinated against RSV today. RSV vaccines, including Pfizer's, are available. Learn more at BewareOfRSV.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
What's for dinner? Burgers?
After last week, no thanks.
Avoiding foods due to fear of diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools? It may not be just stomach issues. It could be EPI, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. EPI can cause uncomfortable symptoms because it's a condition where the pancreas doesn't release enough digestive enzymes to break down food. But EPI can be managed. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor about your symptoms. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Now, back to InfoTrack. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
With a big push toward the use of so-called green energy, what are the job prospects for fossil fuel workers? Here with more, InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Morgan Frank, assistant professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Computing and Information. He's the corresponding author on a study that's now out about job prospects for fossil fuel workers as society transitions to green energy. Professor, one conclusion that might surprise listeners is that current fossil fuel workers already have skills needed for green jobs?
Yeah, that's right. To assess the assertion we've heard in the discourse about a just transition for U.S. fossil fuel workers, we pulled on occupational skill requirements as reported by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. This allowed us to compare different types of job titles within extraction industry and compare those to the skills required by occupations that we expect in green industry occupations as well. What we found is that there's a pretty good alignment between the skills fossil fuel workers already use and the skills required by emerging green jobs. And what we found looking at historical career mobility data from the U.S. Census is that these skills have been important to fossil fuel workers' career mobility in the past.
So the new jobs that you anticipate, how high-tech might they be, or will they involve operating high-tech equipment?
They actually span the gamut in terms of being both high-skill and low-skill. There are many high-skill jobs required to develop the new green technology and to improve the engineering and manufacturing of those technologies from a technological standpoint. But we also need a lot more blue-collar work as well for things like manufacturing the parts, installing the parts, and transporting all the parts needed to build this new green infrastructure. So we expect that there's jobs across the spectrum that will emerge within the green industry as it continues to grow.
Now, when you compared where fossil fuel workers are employed to the expected locations of future energy plants, what did you find?
Trying to guess where green jobs will emerge is a rather tricky task. We approached this problem in a couple different ways. The first was to look at where green energy power plants are located today. And when we compared those locations, basically latitudes and longitudes, with employment distributions across the U.S., according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics for fossil fuel workers, there was a really clear disconnect. There was basically no overlap. Now, this first approach was probably oversimplistic. It's basically like saying where there are green energy producing jobs today is where green jobs will emerge over the next 10 years. And this might not be the case. For example, things like the Inflation Reduction Act might incentivize new jobs to emerge in areas that don't really have green energy employment at the moment. So to tackle this in a more complex way, we took employment projections from the U.S. Department of Labor that project 10 years ahead and modeled where we expect green jobs to emerge across the U.S. over the next 10 years. And again, the picture was not great. There was not a lot of co-location between where fossil fuel workers are located today and where we expect green jobs to emerge over the next 10 years.
And part of the issue there is that you don't see fossil fuel workers traditionally relocating for a new job. Do we know why that is?
Our analysis basically does not answer this question. Although it's true that fossil fuel workers historically don't move a lot across state lines or even within the state, it's kind of hard for us to say exactly why. Building on what we found, clearly the next step is to try to assess what social barriers might help ease the economic barrier that we've identified in our analysis. And our efforts are going to be to try to actually reach out and survey fossil fuel workers and ask them maybe if they're a multi-generational family that's been working for the same coal company, how does that impact their decision to relocate to a different community? What about do they feel optimistic about their ability to reskill if they need to? Or what types of incentives might help them decide to relocate beyond just reskilling and beyond their identification as a fossil fuel worker?
We're visiting with Morgan Frank, assistant professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Computing and Information. Their study, that's now out in the journal Nature Communications, looked at job prospects for fossil fuel workers during society's transition to green energy. Professor, what about the long-term prospects for workers at these green energy plants? Is there a concern there?
There is a big concern. One of the things that our analysis points to is that there's a good alignment with a lot of the upfront labor required to build these green industry opportunities. For example, manufacturing the parts for windmills or solar panels, transporting those manufactured parts to on-site, doing the installation and initial setup for these infrastructural systems. Those are the types of things that we think today's fossil fuel workers could easily adapt to and take advantage of those jobs as they emerge. But ongoing, there's a bit of a concern because we expect these upfront jobs to be what are sometimes called last mile jobs. They're around for just a little bit as we deal with this initial influx of demand for labor. But once these systems are set up, the infrastructure is set up, hopefully many fewer workers will be needed to actually do the maintenance for that on an ongoing fashion. So if that's the case, then in the long run, we may find ourselves in a similar situation where we have these workers who we transitioned to employment in green industry jobs, but are still now facing some uncertainty and trying to figure out what to do next.
Now, you mentioned before the term just transition. Maybe people are hearing that for the first time. It means a morally appropriate changeover. Now, to make sure that communities, particularly rural areas, are not left out in the cold, what more do you think local, state, and federal officials can do for workers?
We need government to create hope in these communities. I think they're feeling a little downtrodden and they're feeling a little lost. Things like, oh, we're gonna fund a reskilling program, we're gonna somehow create more jobs, or we're gonna give you the skills you need to move to the city and get a city job. I feel like these kind of devalue people where they are. It's kind of forcing them to change themselves, and that creates some friction in terms of adopting these programs. That's more my opinion. Strictly speaking, in terms of our analysis, the co-location issue, where this friction between where fossil fuel workers are today and where we think green jobs will be over the next 10 years, there's kind of two possible solutions to that. The first is somehow we incentivize these fossil fuel workers to relocate to where the green jobs will be. The second is that somehow we create an incentive for green industry employers to set up shop and to create jobs in these fossil fuel communities where they are today. I think there are challenges to both approaches, and our analysis and the history of fossil fuel workers' career mobility suggests that moving them elsewhere is maybe not the best solution, but it remains unclear exactly what type of incentives and what types of policy mechanisms can get green energy employers to open up shop in these fossil fuel communities. Often, for example, the energy generation part of green industry work, you can have spatial requirements. For example, you need a lot of sunlight if you're going to produce solar energy. You need wind if you're going to have wind energy. So there's some spatial constraints that might limit where employers might be. However, the construction and manufacturing part of these industries might be more flexible. And also, our study points to that not only are fossil fuel workers already skilled for some of these more blue-collar green occupations, but also appropriately skilled for other industries that potentially have nothing to do with green industry occupations.
Morgan Frank, assistant professor in the University of Pittsburgh School of Computing and Information, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
Imagine getting ahead of your irritable bowel syndrome with constipation or IBS-C by treating it with Linzess. Then you could start proactively managing your constipation with belly pain and get ahead of your symptoms. Talk to your doctor about Linzess, linaclotide. Linzess is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. It's not a laxative. It's a once-daily pill that helps you get ahead of your symptoms. It's proven to help you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually.
Do not give Linzess to children less than 2. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling.
Imagine, what could relief from IBS-C mean for you? Talk to your doctor and say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS.
InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
When sexual harassment happens in the workplace, chances are the company won't deal with the complaint properly. Why does this happen, and what can a victim do about it? With the story, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Adrian Lawrence is a former ESPN anchor and legal analyst and now the author of the book Staying in the Game, The Playbook for Beating Workplace Sexual Harassment. Adrian, for those who aren't familiar with your story, your role in this issue apparently began as a result of the sexual harassment environment at ESPN. Tell us what's wrong with the typical way that sexual harassment is dealt with in the workplace.
Unfortunately, the vast majority of companies treat sexual harassment like it's a legal issue. It is rarely, if ever, a legal issue. You know, over 5 million people are sexually harassed in workplaces across the country. And less than 1% ever even file a complaint with a government agency, and even fewer than that actually sue. So the fact that people think it's legal is in part why companies treat it as a legal issue, where suddenly you become their opposition. When in reality, this is just bullying. So it can be something that managers need to address.
You write about 5 common characteristics of people to avoid in the workplace. Tell us about those characteristics.
This is probably one of my funnest chapters to write, in part because it's largely based on life experience, also conversations with people, and what I've seen in cases that there are very similar personalities for people who engage in harassment and different approaches that they take. For instance, the ulterior motive mentor, the person who swoops in pretending they want to help you out and give you guidance when they're really just trying to maybe make a romantic pass at you. And it's not where you want to be in a situation where you are just trying to do your best and make your contribution as an employee, but now you're going to end up having to fight off someone who thinks that you'd be better fit to be girlfriend or mistress material.
What are the mental health consequences of being in a sexual harassment situation, and how do you deal with that?
A lot of people don't fully appreciate how much it can mess up your head game. One of the biggest aspects of sexual harassment is the mental part. Because again, this is bullying to get you to play small, where you have an economic livelihood, you have a family to take care of. If you're a dual income earner, you can't have being without your income. And so there is so much stress that can come into play. And a lot of individuals who are subject to sexual harassment or even just exposed to seeing it as a bystander end up with depression, anxiety, PTSD. These are things that can disrupt your entire life and how you interact with your loved ones. You have to be very, very protective of your mental state. And that was something that I witnessed in my own experiences where I would see the men around me observing things that bothered them, and you could see the impact it had on them because they don't want to watch people be sexually harassed or be bullied or mistreated either. And feeling like you can't say anything, that really can impact a lot in terms of the head game.
Adrian, what are the biggest misconceptions that women continue to have about harassment?
A lot of women think they need to be touched, and that is not the case. Also, too, unfortunately, there is this mentality of, I'm lucky to be here. It's a very American worker mentality, and they need to realize that that is not true either. You do not have to tolerate someone treating you with disrespect and trying to weaponize your gender or sex against you just so that they can feel like they're in power and in control. It's not okay, and it's all right to stand up for yourself and to believe what you know occurred and not have someone gaslight you.
The Me Too movement certainly has brought this to the forefront, but do you think that we're making real progress, and are you optimistic on the future of dealing with sexual harassment as a country?
I really liked the Me Too movement in terms of that it helped largely women feel comfortable in speaking out about these things, because that's how they continued to persist in terms of harassment and sexual abuse, is the silence factor. So it's good that it broke the silence. Unfortunately, the situation we're in right now with COVID-19 is that there's a lot of job scarcity and economic insecurity. And so my concern is that it's essentially going to make people go silent again because they can't risk being without a livelihood. And on top of that, a lot of people are feeling powerless and they're going to want to use bullying tactics like sexual harassment to feel like they've got some control over their lives.
Adrian Lawrence, the author of Staying in the Game, The Playbook for Beating Workplace Sexual Harassment. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
And that wraps up this week's show. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitty. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll be here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Hit after hit after hit. The Valley's fun music. 105.7 CFW.
Is 105.7 CFW.
You know you drive me up a wall, the way you make good for all the nasty tricks you pull. Seems like we're making up more than we're making love. And it always seems you got something on your mind other than me. Girl, you got to change your crazy ways. You hear me? Say you're leaving on a 7:30 train and that you're heading out to many times it kind of gets like feeling bad looks good, yeah. That kind of loving turns a man to slave.
This is 105.7 CFW. A part of the valley is Big Falls and Beaver Creek Reserve. This is 105.7 CFW, the valley's fun music.
My boss was Mr. McGee. never turned me on. There's something about the clouds and her mist. She wasn't too bright, but I could tell when she kissed me, she knew how to get a kiss. She wore a raspberry beret, the kind you find in a secondhand store. Raspberry beret, and if it was worn, she wouldn't wear much more. Raspberry beret, I think I love her. The rain sounds so cool when it hits the bottom roof. Horses wonder who you are. Thunder drowns out, but the lightning sees. You feel like a movie star. Listen, this ain't the first time, ain't the greatest. But I tell ya, if I had the chance to do it all again, I wouldn't change a stroke. This baby, I'm the most. But a girl as fine as she was.
CFW.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I heave up, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's heaving to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
When I'm working, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money, and for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home,
when I come home,
oh, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's growing older than you.
But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be a man who walks.
Be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home,
when I come home,
yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. No chances for today should be light. Could have a little bit of light rain mixed in with it as well. Any kind of accumulation, if you see it, will be well under an inch. Clouds at upper 30s later in the afternoon. For the overnight, mostly cloudy and upper 20s. Right now, it's 31.
CFW.
CFW.
Yeah.
Valley's got oldies stations.
Earth Angel, Earth Angel.
It's got stations for your kids. Well, we thought it was time for a fun station. Chock full of the music that you grew up with and fun. That's us. Welcome to the Valley's Fun Music, 105.7 CFW.
105.7 CFW, the Valley's Fun Music, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Bug Tussle, we're out there.
Identify yourself.
WCFW FM and WCFW HD1, Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the entire Chippewa Valley.
A civic media radio station.
FM has always stood for fine music. And now, FM stands for fun music too. This is the Valley's Fun Music, 105.7.
CFW.
Chippewa Valley.